This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap for Thursday, the 1st of December. Ding, ling, 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 ling. That's the sound of holidays and merriness and stuff. Coming up today, an extended interview with the creator of the Clue app. That's the C-L-E-W app.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Yeah, just imagine lots of like jingles and ding ling 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 ling, that noise, which you hear, and awful Christmas music.
That was the strangest, and yeah, me saying that was the strangest intro. I mean, you've come some way there. Well done, Stephen Scott. That was fantastic. How entertaining are you?
Honestly, I am like that there Santa Claus.
Oh, by the way, pinch punch. First of the month, no return.
Oh, stop all that rubbish. I can't be bothered with that nonsense. I don't even know what it means. It's garbage. You make it up.
No, it means I can give you a dead arm and you can't do anything about it.
Give you a dead arm.
It's law.
Right. Hi. Welcome to the festive month. Sean and I today, and it's a bit of a special one today because we are having an extended conversation with the founder or the creator of the app, the Clue app, which is the indoor navigation application. Indoor navigation application. Yeah, that makes sense.
It works.
Yeah, it actually did work, yeah. You know that way you think, I've just said the word application twice, but no, I didn't.
No, you're like that Drake or Dr. Dre.
Who?
Yeah, I don't know.
Right. But yes, so we're going to have an extended interview with Paul. Also, we're going to get a demo of how the Clue app actually works in reality from Robin Christofferson coming up a bit later as well. Look, should we just get on with it today?
What?
I know.
Not talk about nonsense for 15 minutes beforehand.
I think we should just get on with it today. Let's get Paul on. Let's have a conversation because I'm really interested to hear more about it. We featured the Clue app on Double Tap TV this week, and I just was so glad that Paul was able to hang back and we could have a bit longer conversation with him. Paul, thank you so much for coming on to Double Tap here.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, this is a really exciting conversation for us, Paul, because, you know, we talk a lot about, well, Sean, you and I, we both know how much we talk about navigation outside, but now we're going to talk about indoor navigation. And that is exactly what your app has created, the Clue app, C-L-E-W. And in my weird accent, that is actually an E for echo, just so we're clear on this. Sean always picks me up on my terrible
that
accent.
Was perfect. Well done.
Was that okay? Were you
happy
with that, Sean?
I'm
glad you're pleased.
Well done.
I live to make you happy. yeah, I'm just interested. So tell us, for those who don't know, what the Clue app is.
All right, I'd be happy to. So the Clue app is an app for route recording and navigations. The idea is that you can hit the record button in any environment. It's designed to work best indoors, but it will also work for short routes outdoors. You walk along that route. Once you're done walking that route, you hit the stop button, and now that route is saved in your phone, and you can navigate along it anytime you want in the future with automatic guidance from the app itself. So when you're initially recording the route, you would either have to have somebody familiar with the route or maybe a sighted guide, depending on the situation. And once you have it saved, the idea is that you can navigate the route independently using your phone.
And that's the difference here, right? Because indoor navigation, you cannot use GPS. There's no way to essentially get your location to that detail inside.
Right.
So with this, it kind of allows you to create your own routes, essentially. Or, sorry, routes, as you say so properly here.
I tend to switch back and forth
randomly.
So.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. But no, it's really interesting. So that's how it works, right? You record a route. So talk us through that process.
Yeah, so you brought up a really important point about the idea of positioning and how do you determine position inside. So what's really exciting about phones in the last few years is that there's been a big push to introduce what's called augmented reality features to phones. So the idea that as you move around in space, you can kind of mix together, you know, what's happening in the physical world with a virtual world. And so in order to make that happen, phones have gotten really, really good at sensing their motion in space. So Phones have things like accelerometers and gyroscopes to sense their motion, but also the camera of the phone is actually a really good instrument for sensing the motion. So when you're, you know, recording a route, essentially what it's doing is it's taking all that sensor data and figuring out how the phone is kind of moving about in space. And one analogy we like to use is the trail of breadcrumbs. Imagine this phone sort of moving around in space and you're sort of dropping this trail of virtual breadcrumbs as you go along. And that kind of forms the basis of the route. And so the last little bit is, you know, these sensors are good at figuring out how the phone moves relative to where it was before, but we also need to establish some sort of absolute starting point, like an absolute reference point. So in the Clue app, we use kind of a combination of, we call it a physical reference point. So, you know, many people might be familiar with the idea that when you're using conventional orientation mobility practices, you might use like a wall or like a corner, like a door, as kind of like a landmark to like orient yourself in a space. We have a very similar process for the Clue app where we have the user set an anchor point where the phone is like starting in a known location, and then the route is created relative to that. There's some other stuff we put on top of it. For instance, a lot of times the phone can just automatically recognize where it is and, you know, short circuit the whole need to start in the same location that you recorded the route. But we try to, you know, the backup is basically the user starts in the correct location, and then they can follow that trail of breadcrumbs that they laid down to the end of the route. And then during that process, they'll be getting things like, you know, directions like, you know, go straight, turn right, turn left, but also haptic feedback from their phone. So it'll give you some kind of a heartbeat when you're facing in the right direction is kind of the general function of the
app. Oh, I got to say, you're so, you know, matter of fact about it, but Clue is one of those apps that when I loaded it up, it blew my mind. I've had this experience a few times with a smartphone. Is I think the first time with the first object recognition that I did, you know, this recognizing my tin of beans or whatever mundane thing it was.
Right.
But still, it changed my world, right? And it sounds like I'm being overly dramatic, but honestly, that sort of impact that technology had, it's almost like magic. And I had exactly the same thing the first time I tried the Clue app, because, you know, it was, how is it recognizing this? And it told me, you know, stairs down, stairs up. I was just testing it around the house. But the speed and responsiveness was absolutely amazing. And I'm so interested in the technology behind it. Would this be possible if it wasn't for the artificial intelligence, as in the augmented reality component?
Yeah, no, I think that's a key driver. So I think one thing I just definitely want to say is, you know, a lot of what we're doing is we're definitely riding a lot of really, you know, awesome kind of technological trends that are happening in the industry. So, you know, these augmented reality capabilities are huge. And I think we're just at the like beginning of what I think is going to be like a major wave in terms of new technology in this area. So moving beyond the phone as a form factor to things like, you know, glasses or headsets and these types of things. And so what's really exciting to me as somebody who's building these types of apps and is interested in this area is leveraging these new capabilities and then building on top of them. So figuring out like what is like the little bit of functionality we can add on top of this great capability that phones are just getting kind of for free without us even needing to do anything to enable that, you know, extra little bit of, you know, functionality. And then the other part is, of course, tailoring it to the needs of people who are blind and visually impaired. So figuring out like, what is the story around accessibility here and how can we like repurpose this technology, which wasn't really designed with this group necessarily in mind. How do we make sure that it is serving the needs of this group? So I think to me, that's like the really exciting thing about the kind of trends that are happening right now.
And how did that come about? Is this your first product, you would say, your first app that is designed for blind and partially sighted people?
Yes, that's true. So just a little bit of background on me. So So I'm a college professor. My background is in artificial intelligence and robotics. So I did my PhD in those areas. And then when I came to Olin College, which is a very small engineering college near Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States, I got very interested in the idea of human-centered design and how technology can be put to work for folks to have an impact in the world. And part of that is just the way that we approach engineering here at Olin, is we put a big emphasis on that. We think engineering historically hasn't done a great job always with that. And then, so I started kind of dabbling in the area, about 8 years ago. And I just kept doing more and more work in the area and built more and more kind of connections with different, groups in the community and also other people who were working in the area, like from a research side. And that kind of slowly built. And then I think the real game changer was kind of like we've been alluding to, is this, once the augmented reality capability went onto iPhones, that was like the real game changer. I was like, the thing that I was doing in my lab with a clunky prototype that like we put together ourselves, all of a sudden I was like, wow, this thing is already in everybody's pocket. There's already a large group of people that have the hardware, that have the software, and now the opportunities really arises. So that was the catalyst for Clue, and then that got sort of popular about 3 years ago, and then we're continuing to build on the concept now with other related apps as well.
So the hardware makes the difference, right? I mean, Sean and I talk about this all the time, don't we? We talk about the cameras inside our smartphones, or we talk right. about the AI, the processing, all of this. And we tend to have the view that, smartphones have gotten to a point where the camera's good enough, right? The it's good enough for most people to do things. But from your perspective, I imagine, no, you want it to be better. You need it to be better, because that then allows more information to get into the iPhone, which means therefore the app can do more, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like two parts to that. There's sort of the camera, or, and I'd even generalize it from the normal camera, which is the idea of like even more advanced sensors like LiDAR, which is light, distance, and ranging. So this is the idea that, some of the newer iPhone models have essentially a 3D camera. So every single point in the image can be labeled with a distance to that point. So that's a huge, emerging opportunity. And then I think just computing power and algorithms. So it's, how do you process the sensor data, or images in this case, how do you process these images to figure out interesting things about the environment? Like Sean, you gave the example of, recognizing like a tin of beans or something. Like, part of that is like cameras getting better, but another part is the sort of underlying algorithms and the sort of state of the art of artificial intelligence getting better. And so, all of the both of those things are the trends that are going to drive more and more advanced capabilities in this space.
Fantastic. And where are we at with Clue? Because Clue has been about for a few years now, I think, and it always seemed to be in, I don't want to say beta, but it was more a proof of concept of the technology, I think. Now, I know there was work right. going on with the user interface and to do with the anchor point at the start as well, but where is Clue at now? Oh, and just another question. Why is it called Clue, by the way?
Oh, yeah. So the Clue name, I'll just start with the easier question. I'll start with the Clue name. So I think the trail of breadcrumbs was like kind of a, early analogy we thought of with the app. And so we were like, what are we going to call this app? We're going to call it like, Hansel or like Gretel or something, to like, the fairy tale of it. Everything we came up with, someone had already like used the name. And so we eventually, someone in the lab was like a big Greek mythology nerd and realized that the clue spelled that way is actually references the myth of the Minotaur and the labyrinth. So the clue of Theseus is this ball of yarn that spools out ahead of Theseus and guides him to the Minotaur, and he's able to just like that was that's where it originally came from. It's a very pretentious name, but it kind of stuck, and I think overall it's an okay name. But so that's where the name came from.
That's a great way to name it. I must admit, I wouldn't have thought of it myself.
Went over my head.
would be the first thing that comes to mind. Yeah.
To the second part of that question, or that second question that I guess Sean asked there, was that question you asked again, Sean? I was more interested in the clue.
Sorry,
answer.
I just wondered where we are with Clue, because it does seem to have been in testing for quite a few years now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say I don't necessarily think of it as like a bright line between like, you know, tests. I kind of think of it as trying to continuously improve it over time. And I think, you know, the biggest things in my opinion are ease of use. So how do we make it get to the point where somebody can pick up this app and figure out how to follow the directions from the app with you know, very little friction at all. And so some of the work we've done, we've put together some interactive like tutorial modules that teach various skills around, you know, how to follow routes. We've also thought about this idea of, you know, right now the app will give directions by default based on the direction the phone is pointing, which is the most natural thing from a technical point of view. But we, you know, realize that some folks have a difficult time like understanding how their phone is oriented in space relative to their body. And so from talking to users, we've been able to like build in systems that kind of allow correct for that and allow it to be relative to the direction of your body instead of the phone. And so think like kind of ease of use improvements like that. And then I think the other component is, like you were saying, Sean, the idea of like aligning to routes, anchor points. I think that's like the biggest issue with the app right now. So we've been working on different approaches to that. So we have a bunch of concepts. I mean, I can go into a lot of the details around those. Some of them have to do with building our own image-based system to use to reference the current position to the route instead of a physical anchor point where you actually have to like put the phone in the correct location. We've also have a proof of concept of using outdoor localization as a way to then guide you indoors. So we can actually use imagery outside and GPS as a way to localize you precisely and then guide you inside a building. So these are like some of the ideas we've been exploring, and I'd be happy to like expand on any of those.
I think certainly the outdoor aspect, you know, we often talk about the last 10 yards problem.
Right.
When you're blind, you know, you can use something like Microsoft Soundscape, for example, to locate a building. And you know, Sean and I both know this. We've spent a lot of time outside of buildings trying to find our way into buildings.
Right.
And it would be kind of nice to, you know, get in occasionally and not have someone come outside and say, "You're right, sir," and go all through all that carry on.
Right.
You know, you ideally want that bridge between the two. And I guess even as we go down the route of driverless cars down the line, and this is obviously a bit of a time away, but you know, if a driverless car drops you off somewhere, no one's going to help you find the door, right? So I guess you're building for the future here, which is very interesting. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that, if you can, this sort of a fusion of outdoor and indoor.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so right now we're kind of starting with the easiest case, which is you know, both Apple and Google are starting to provide systems where they can localize you outdoors using a combination of images and GPS. So Google has, you know, their cars that drive around, and they're capturing these, you know, 3D images along with basically, you know, wide angle images and also like 3D information about the environment. Apple actually has these people that wear these giant backpacks just like strapped up with all these like laser scanners and cameras, and they actually just walk around on city streets and map them out. And so why I say we're starting with the easy case. So Apple has a very limited set of cities in the world right now that they've done this mapping process for. So in the US, there's probably like 50 to 60 cities. In England, for instance, like I think London is like the one place that has been mapped at the moment. So we're starting with that as our starting point, since Boston is one of the cities that has been mapped. But essentially, you take your phone outdoors, you kind of just, all you need to do is really walk down the sidewalk, and it's just, it kind of pinpoints you down to, I'd say within a foot or two of error. Like, it's very, very accurate. And it's even accurate enough for our purposes that we're not even focused on the last, you know, you know, 10 yards prop or whatever outside, we're thinking like, is this good enough to actually guide us into a building? And it turns out in a lot of cases, it actually is good enough to guide you into a building. So not only can it guide you in through the door, but actually get you to like a particular section of like a store or like a, you know, a counter or a, you know, a registration desk or something of that nature. So, one of the things we're working on this summer, which we're really excited about, is that kind of hybrid system of like outdoor to indoor transitions.
Can I ask you about, my interpretation of what you have with Clue is that it's very personal, that you can obviously choose your route. You can record that route. You can use it that way. And I think that's great. I just wonder if business could benefit from this. If I think about a shopping mall, for example.
Yeah.
You know, could there almost be a map that is built by the shopping mall that could be therefore either downloaded to or available to the
Absolutely.
App?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like the other big area that we're working towards. So I think when I was saying originally, Sean, you asked me this question, like, you know, what is it going to take to kind of like push this thing to the next level? And I think there's the usability, there is like aligning to routes. But I think the other thing is the ability to share routes and leverage like work that other people have done in order to navigate along those, because there's definitely a set of use cases. Like I get people that are like, you know, I'm going to a hotel and I want to be able to get from my room to the elevator. And then they say, all right, I'm going to have somebody help me record that route. And I use it a few times. And that definitely makes a lot of sense. But what if I'm just going to a place like one time, like I'm not going to even have the opportunity to record that route. And so that, I think that's where like some of the things you're saying, Stephen, kind of come in, which are like, can we create routes that can easily be shared among multiple people? And that is actually another big thing that we're working on right now. We basically have two systems that we're working on. Both of them involve tags. So I don't know if you guys have ever had like anybody from Navilens on the show, but they have like a tag-based system where you can like figure out how far away a tag is based on scanning with your camera. We're using a similar type of technology to allow somebody who owns a business to like put up tags in their space, either just at the starting point or at the starting point and along the route itself, in order so that anybody who comes into the building can just like orient themselves and start navigating along a path. So of course it does have the trade-off of like the person who owns the business has to be willing to like, you know, put up tags in an environment. But I think it's a case that, you know, many people will go for, I think. Like, I think there's a good case to be made from a lot of perspectives as to why this would be something that could be attractive to a business. Definitely like the bigger play is like a tagless solution where it's all based on indoor imagery. There's nothing at all, no infrastructure at all. In my view, that's still like, we're still not quite at that point yet. Maybe some of like the really big players, if they have really, you know, expensive equipment to map out the space initially, might be feasible. But our solutions are focused on what can we provide that's free that anybody can use and doesn't require any special hardware other than an iPhone for both creating the map and also following the map.
It is so interesting hearing you talk about all this. And I want to get more on this from you shortly, but let's take a short break, Paul, for just a moment, because I want to bring in a demo of the app itself, the Clue app in operation. Our very own Robin Christofferson, who's a regular contributor to our show, he got in touch and shared his demonstration. You might have seen a visual demonstration that he did on Double Tap TV. Well, he recorded this for us here on the podcast so that we could all get a sense of how this works in reality. Him following his route from his office at home downstairs and back up to his office with some surprising results, as we'll find.
So we're just going to do a simple route here from the office upstairs to the back door, and then I'll retrace that route. So at the moment, I'm facing my desk, and I'm at the end of the hall, the landing on upstairs in our house, and the door's to my right. So I'm going to swing round on my chair. So now I'm facing the door. Now this app used to needed to be put on a vertical surface to orientate it. That isn't necessary anymore. That was weird. So I'll open up Clue. Open Clue.
Clue. Options. Button.
Okay. First thing we see is an options button. If I flick to the right.
Help. Button.
Help.
Record a single use route. Button.
Record a
green and white sign with black text. Possible text. Single use route.
So record a single use route. That's what we want. I have no idea why it then goes on to recognise that icon or button with that description there. I've got screen recognition off.
Record a single use route.
Okay.
Stop recording. Now recording a single use
route. Walking ahead, three, four, five steps, nearly at the bathroom. Doing a right degree turn, 90 degree turn, taking one, two steps, not going into the bedroom, taking a right degree turn. I'm at the top of the stairs now. I'm just going to start walking down the stairs, keeping the phone vertical in front of me all the time. I'm now at the bottom of the stairs. I'm going to take a right turn and then take two steps ahead. I'm not going to go into the living room. And I'm going to take another 90 degree turn. And now I'm going to start walking ahead. I'm walking down the... Okay. Now in the kitchen, take a 90 degree turn to the right. I'm walking through one part of the kitchen. I'm going to thread my way through into the second half of the kitchen, through a little gap between an island and the wall. And now I'm going to take a left 90 degree turn. And now I'm going to start walking ahead. One, two, three. This is the back door, guys. Okay then.
Record a voice note.
Stop recording.
Start navigation button.
So I could have saved a voice note at the beginning of the route, at the end of the route, and even actually at different points in the route as well. So now we're still facing the back door. I'm going to start.
Start navigation button. A green pie chart with a white.
Double tap on that.
Stop. Turn around.
Turn around.
Navigation.
Turn around. Yes. Oh, now I'm facing away from the back door, and it's saying that's in the right direction. One, two, three. Turn right. Yes. Oh, now I'm going to thread my way through the island. Two, three.
Turn left.
Oh, yep. Turn left. I'm near the hallway door. Start walking through. Two, three, four,
slight
five.
Right. Continue straight.
Yep.
Slight left.
Oh, I'm turning left. Oh, and now I'm facing the stairs. And as I do, it's now ticking. So it's definitely threading me right up the stairs.
Continue
yep.
straight.
Yeah, I'm still going up the stairs. Oh, I'm at the top of the stairs. Turn left. 90 degrees. Yep, go ahead. One,
turn
two. Turn left. Wow. Now I'm facing directly towards the office as I walk down the landing. Oh, wow. Guys, I'm back where I was and my knees are touching the front of my office chair. That is amazing. Now, I can't record and do the demo on the same device, so I'm actually using my phone in one hand and holding another device, it's actually an iPad, in the other hand. So I haven't got my hands free to do the normal thing, which is to kind of touch base with things that you're going past in your home as you walk around. But I was able to get all the way back up here with the right verbal directions and the audio feedback to successfully record and then retrace a route. And now if we wanted to...
Help. Button. Record a single use route. But save route. Button. A green and white sign with black text.
And now if we wanted to, we could save this route here, but I'm not going to do that. We would give it a name, etc. Okay. Clue. C-L-E-W.
Thank you, Robin. That's Robin Christofferson there from AbilityNet, of course, demonstrating the Clue app for us. You can watch a demonstration on the Double Tap TV episode. Check it out on the AMI app. And also, you can find us on YouTube as well. Just search for Double Tap On Air on YouTube. Stick around more with Paul Rivolo, creator of the Clue app, next on Double Tap.
Send us your feedback to feedback@doubletaponair.com. Leave us a voicemail at 1-877-803-4567. You're listening to Double Tap. This is Double Tap. Now, back to the show.
And today on the show, we're joined by Paul Rivolo, the creator of the Clue app. Before the break, Paul, we were having a chat before Robin's excellent demo, of course, of the Clue app in action. We were talking about how essentially stores, you know, may have to map their own environments in order for, you know, these apps to be able to really work well. You know, so, you know, indoor navigation, which is what we're talking about here, is often hampered by the fact that there is just not a huge amount of information available. And I'm kind of wondering if there's another way to look at this, in that instead of thinking about a store going round and mapping every aisle and mapping every product and mapping everything, actually instead having the machine learning do a lot of the work in advance, so that when you point your camera at something, say it's a, I don't know, a cereal box or something, it will know exactly what it is. By definition, it will just know what that is. You know, you could, for example, going into a coffee shop, you could, you know, instead of having to map the entire coffee shop and where the tables are, where the chairs are, instead of that, it recognizes, the app can say, there's a chair, there's a table, there's someone sitting on that chair. You know, surely the technology is at the point where it could do that. And would that not be easier? Would that not get us to where we want to be as blind people quicker?
Yeah, that's definitely a really good point. I mean, I think there's like kind of like two different challenges at work here. So there's the like challenge of, you know, you're in a particular aisle, say, and you're, you know, looking at some set of products, and what you're saying is like somebody could have gone in ahead of time and said, like, you know, shelf 4 in aisle 3 has this cereal in it or something, versus like just recognizing the packaging itself. And I definitely think you're right that the recognizing the packaging itself is, you know, important, is probably a better solution. And I think like that will be like the direction that things move in as technology gets better. But I think the part that will never be solved by that is like, you know, where is the cereal, right? Like, where in the environment? And this is a problem not only for folks who are blind or low vision. This is a problem for everybody. You're saying, where is this product in this environment? And so I think from that perspective, that kind of has to have some sort of, if you want that capability, you need some kind of map attached to it, I believe. To like say, you know, you're not in this environment, you're not looking at this product, but the product is, you know, 5 aisles over or something like that.
Yeah, it's the fusion of the two, isn't it? Really,
yeah,
that's the key. That's what we want, isn't it?
Exactly.
We want to be able to, because I think of, you know, again, like you said, I mean, I think about the exactly the same analogy, I guess, because you're talking about a food aisle. I think about a shopping mall. If I'm walking down and I'm using my phone to navigate, it can identify the names, the logos, the brands, the sale signs, you know, all those things it could identify. Essentially, we want typical blind people, right? We just want it all. We want it all. We want it now. We want all these features to exist and bring all these things together. And, you know, but it seems as if the technology is allowing us to get there, although albeit slowly, albeit over time, and it may just be a matter of a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, yeah, in terms of when this is going to happen, I think one possible thing that would just totally accelerate the whole process would be if a product like smart glasses went mainstream, all of a sudden, you know, and this is like every technology company, all the big players, they're all pouring billions and billions and billions of dollars into this right now. They all want to develop the next like iPhone, right? They want it, like that's a, you know, $100 trillion business, probably the next thing. So if that, once that becomes mainstream, and once like even 10, 20% of the people walking into a shopping mall are wearing these things, all of a sudden there's going to be so much interest in being able to automatically map out and recognize every aspect of the shopping environment. Not always for the most positive purposes, mind you, right? Like, so, you know, a lot of it will be about, you know, advertising and, you know, driving and changing customer, you know, consumer behavior. On the other hand, that will fuel improvements in accessibility. So I think it's like, I think I'm always trying to think like, what, you know, what are the trends that are going to happen, and how do we like leverage them and repurpose them for accessibility? And so I feel like there's going to be a big wave of technology companies trying to advance that type of future. Whether that will be the future, I don't actually know, but that's a future that a lot of technology companies see. And if that comes to pass, there'll be a big opportunity to boost accessibility for folks who are blind or have low vision alongside that. So This is interesting, just a fascinating time, in my opinion, right now in this whole space.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And yeah. Artificial intelligence, augmented reality, all of that coming together. As I said, Clue blew my mind when I first tried the app. And for me, it was the first time that the sci-fi movie version of computer vision almost, it's almost in touching distance, and your right. your background in robotics it interests me as well, where you sort of touched on it already, that how close are we to that true computer vision where it can recognize things, that mixture of AI and object recognition. It's absolutely amazing. But you do think that the smart glasses is something we already have the algorithm there. It's just feeding it all that different image data, that point data that we need from LiDAR and cameras and everyone wearing them, basically.
Yeah, I think that's basically right. I mean, I think there's definitely, there's definitely more work to do, I think, on the algorithm side always. But I think if you're talking about like people walking around in common spaces that a lot of people can go to and you already have images for those specific spaces, that's going to drive a lot of the progress, like you said. Like it's really about just like how do you get images of particular spaces so that the recognition can be done. And then if you have enough data about each space, you kind of have like a pretty, a pretty comprehensive and accurate system for that whole idea of computer vision, picking up these objects and showing them to users and alerting people when they're passing by things and things of that nature.
Is that the issue ultimately? Is this the problem that it's the data ultimately? We just need more and more and more data to be able to make these apps more capable. It's not so much that the technology isn't there; it's that it's the data about the real world, which of course is always evolving as well.
Right, right. I mean, I think take for example going into a cereal aisle or something. If you're able to go down the specific aisle in a store or a similar store and get images of those, specific boxes and have those on hand so the system can learn to identify those specific, cereal boxes, that system's going to work really, really well, right? If you have a lot of data, there's 3D data, there's really high quality camera data, all those kinds of things, that's going to work really well. So in that kind of scenario, I think the technology's, already there to a great extent. I think in less constrained environments, maybe like you're going into an environment you've never seen these specific products before, but you're trying to pick up on text or something, or like pick up on things that are maybe kind of generalized to like a new product box or something that you've never seen. I think that's still like a challenging area. So I think there's kind of like a situation where just like if we have more and more data of the specific environments that people are going to be in most commonly, I think we can really solve the problem quite well. And then I think in more unconstrained environments, there's still going to be challenges that people will be working on to keep pushing it forward more.
You mentioned one of the big features you're working on this year, which is obviously outdoor and indoor navigation being fused together in some way, which sounds really exciting, and we look forward to seeing the results of that. Anything else you can tell us? Any other secrets you can divulge with us of what's to come?
Well, one thing I would say, there's no real secrets here, so I would
Excellent.
Just say that.
Tell us everything then.
Yeah, I'll tell you everything. but yeah, I mean, I guess one thing I did want to say is just a little bit about the process that we're going to go through over the summer. So we're running, we call it the Clue Co-Designer Program. So we're going to have 50 folks from all over the world who are blind or visually impaired, or some folks who are, orientation mobility instructors are going to be working with us. And the idea is to really have them be pushing forward these projects and these ideas and help shape them. So we definitely have some starting points, some just general areas that we've been working on, have done some technological feasibility work. And then the idea is to really partner with those folks to kind of move things along. I think that, the major areas are outdoor to indoor navigation. There's continuing work on our mapping solution, which is this tag-based solution where you can create maps of any environment. And then better anchor point recognition. So just with the regular Clue app, making it easier to use, easier to localize to routes. And then the other one is, we call it software LiDAR. So it's this idea of how do you emulate the capabilities of a LiDAR when you don't have a LiDAR? So using a combination of machine learning techniques and some other computer vision techniques, trying to determine the distance of each point in the image to the camera. So it seems like it's going to be at least a few good years till the majority of people have a LiDAR on their phone. Like maybe it's like 5 years away, 5-6 years, maybe longer, hard to know. And so in the meantime, what we really want to be able to do is have that, an emulation of that capability on people's phones, so they can get some of the benefits of it, even if they don't have that feature.
That's amazing.
Yeah, those are like the big areas.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I guess you're the guy in your home that they all come to with the tech problems, right? So you're the guy, someone can't download an app, they come to you and you think, yeah, you want to see what I do for my day job. You think you can't download an app? Try this. Try machine learning.
Sometimes the mundane things are harder than you expect. So.
Yeah, that's true.
That do some machine true. Learning, but sometimes the tech support is harder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that's, you've got to deal with people then, haven't you? You can't...
People.
That's a different ballgame.
Yeah, well, that's the key, right? That's the key.
We mentioned smart glasses, Paul. I'm just interested in your take on the whole, smart glasses and taking away the camera in favor of the LiDAR. Apple are rumored to be doing that because of people's fear almost, hesitance about cameras everywhere. So LiDAR instead of actual physical camera. What's your feeling on that? Does that actually work better in your point of view?
That's interesting. I know Apple's, they're very like secretive about what they're doing. And so I think people are always trying to read through that. I definitely think it's clear that they'll be pursuing a LiDAR. I guess I would hope they would keep the camera, at least from the perspective of, there's obviously some tensions that are, we have to kind of work out between this sort of, assistive technology and, privacy, but, definitely having the camera is really important for a lot of use cases. I have a hard time believing that they would be able to do they could really do this stuff without the camera.
Really,
but it's interesting that I mentioned that these phones can track their motion in 3D space really accurately, but it's actually not the LiDAR doesn't actually help very much with that. Like you'd think the LiDAR would be really helpful for figuring out how you're moving in 3D space, and it helps a little bit, but really, the camera is actually the thing that does it. It's like tracking little features in the image as you move around in space. So it feels to me like that's going to be a crucial part of the future. I don't know if they're going to start making it from a privacy standpoint. Maybe there'll be a distinction between, images that are used by an algorithm and discarded immediately and never sent off the device versus images that are, saved to a device and could be used later. I mean, those are really challenging questions. I thought about them a little bit. I feel like I need to think about them more, but I think those are going to be some really big tensions that'll kind of, we saw them play out like in the Google Glass, like on like a very small kind of baby scale, I feel like, but they're going to play out in a much bigger way, I think, in the next, few years.
Absolutely.
Well, we all know that when Apple do it, people will pay attention.
They will. Yeah. I kind of feel like they'll be the folks to do it. I don't know. In any case, I'm hoping that whoever does it, they'll think of it as a hardware product and not as a vehicle to sell ads or influence people's behavior. Because I think that's, to me, that's really the big distinction is like having something that like the product is for you. You're the one using it. You're paying for it. And you own the product versus, something free, but then you pay for it with like being manipulated by some.
Well, that's the argument about Apple, isn't it? You pay more for the product, but that's because you're essentially paying for that safety and knowledge that you're not the product. The product is the product and it remains that way. You pay the premium, the Apple tax, if you like, for it, but that's what you get. And I don't imagine Apple Glass would be any different. Unfortunately, it's the services that are on the devices themselves that can be often the problem there. But it is a very interesting time. If Apple Glass comes along, You know, I imagine this is something, well, you're going to be all over this. We as blind people are going to be all over it because we just think this is brilliant. You know, when it happens, we'll be just like, yes, 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 sign me up. But, you know, it's such an interesting area. How long, I mean, I guess, you know, based on how long it's taken you to develop Clue, how much work would need to go into developing it for another product like that, do you think?
I mean, there's probably a version of it where it just works on the glass. I don't have to do anything. It kind of depends on how Apple, you know, approaches the challenges. It's possible that it runs a very similar operating system to iOS. It's possible, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways, the, you know, it's not that different in a lot of ways, the, in terms of like, from like a app developer's perspective. So I don't think it would take long at all. I think there's a chance it just works and it's like using a different screen or something. And it just is able to use exactly the same, you know, libraries that we're using now. But I assume it would be very, very easy. I mean, I think in terms of how long like Clue has taken to develop, a lot of it was, you know, early work that was like, we didn't have the right hardware product. So we were like doing a lot of our own hardware development or, you know, implementing algorithms that, you know, weren't really, you know, kind of mature yet. And then there's all the like other stuff that's not the like, you'd be surprised how long the just like making the user interface look decent and having help messages and like tutorials and menus and, you know, just all that kind of stuff that's like pretty mundane and like nothing like really new about it. But that stuff actually takes a tremendous amount of time as well. So it's definitely a mixture. But I think if a smart glasses came out, I think it would be very quick that like there would be apps all over it for folks who are blind to leverage. I don't think it would be a slow process at all.
And what about Android? Are you on Android? No.
I don't, yeah. I get this question a lot. I'm not on Android. I really regret not being on Android. So mostly for me, it's because since I'm a college professor, the way that I work on these projects is I work on them a lot during the year on my own and also with some students who are doing it for like credit, like research credit. And then over the summer, so I get grants from different foundations. Like right now our support is from the National Science Foundation in the US. And then I have like a bunch of students working over the summer. But the model is not really conducive to maintaining like both an iOS and an Android app. Like I think to do that, I would need like a full-time like professional developer in order to do that. And right now that's not like the resources that I have. So I don't know, like, I think to get to that next level, I'd have to spin it off as like a company or something, or there'd have to be some other model to support it. So
I don't suppose,
I don't know. I feel bad. Like I feel bad about leaving the Android users out, but I've just realized that I just don't have the resources to make it happen.
I don't suppose you've put together a Google Glass version in the lab at all, have you?
Well, that's funny you mentioned that because that was all of our original prototypes were all based on Google technology. So we had a Google Glass. We did put together a very bad prototype of this using Google Glass. I mean, it was not exactly the same thing. It was a little bit different. And then Google had this like really early technology in augmented reality called Project Tango. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool technology, but it required like very specialized hardware. And then Apple's approach was have it run on all the phones, and Apple just, you know, ate Google's lunch on that basically. So yeah, I did do a lot of Android development like earlier in the process.
What's your take on subscription modeling that a lot of apps are going down the route of? We spoke to Winston Chen from the VoiceDream suite of apps, who has made the decision on the macOS version to go subscription, to essentially build a business, to, you know, take this out of being a passion project and actually turning it into a tangible business. Is that something you could see Clue doing, or is that not really in your mind at the moment?
Yeah, it's definitely not in my mind at the moment. The margins you can make on an app are kind of small, honestly. And so if you were to try to commercialize something like this, I just don't unless you repurpose it as like a product that could, you know, like appeal to like a much larger group of people, like not just the people who are blind or visually impaired, I think the like margins you can make on it like wouldn't be enough to make the business sustainable. So my model is like just keep raising money through grants. And also my college is like very excited about this type of impact and like enables me to spend time working on it. So I feel like I'd rather like do that work to enable the product to exist and then just have it be free. I guess if I had something like the Voice Dream Suite, where I think that does have a lot of like, that has a pretty wide appeal, I think that could make sense in that space. Like there might be enough like of a market to push it out. But I think for something that's like really designed for people who are blind or visually impaired for navigation in this case, like I don't think it is likely that it'd fly as a business.
Very interesting. Paul, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been great.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation. I love the questions. I really appreciate it.
Well, there you go, Sean. A very interesting show today, learning all about the Clue app and the development process. There's more in it than I thought.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much potential to that Clue app. It gets me excited, I will say. I tried the app when I was in Saskatchewan, funnally enough.
Oh, here we go.
From my hotel room to the lift. And yeah, it works really well. It's one of those times where you think, this is almost like magic. You know, technology works so well. I love it.
Absolutely. Listen, great show today. Thank you so much for being with us. We're back again tomorrow. Keep your feedback coming as well. We'll be talking to Ira on tomorrow's episode to find out all about the big changes there. So stick around for that. This has been Double Tap. I've been Sean Preece. No, hang on. That's not right.
I've been Stephen Scott.
There you go. Well, there you go. That's kind of been an interesting turn of events. On that bombshell, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Love Double Tap? Did you know we're on the TV too? Check out brand new episodes of Double Tap TV on AMI TV every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Or binge on all episodes online at ami.ca/Double Tap. We're also on YouTube. Search for Double Tap to catch our episodes there too.
Hi, I'm Ramya Amuthan. Join me weekly for AMI Audiobook Review, the podcast that explores new titles, introduces us to famous narrators, and updates what's hot at the Center for Equitable Library Access. Download episodes of AMI Audiobook Review from your favorite podcast provider.